We're thankful for the presence of everyone that could make it out this morning. This month, we have Romans 11, verse 22 for our consideration. And my subject this morning is to discuss an example of God's goodness. I chose this opportunity to... It's not really an O. Henry, but we're going to have a little twist. Because this is a story, an account. Jeff was reading about it this morning here in first chapter of Deuteronomy. It's an account that's always bothered me a little bit. God sure did seem to be awfully mean. Until you understand, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. So this morning, hopefully, we'll leave here with a better understanding of the account of the Exodus of the children of Israel. Behold the goodness of God. Romans 11 to verse 22. I'll read the verse. I'm going to leave it to another brother to interpret. Behold therefore the goodness and the severity of God. On them which fell, severity, but toward thee, goodness, if thou continue in his goodness. Otherwise thou also shall be cut off. And among other lessons, Paul writes this passage of Scripture in Romans 11 to warn the Gentiles to beware, to take heed, lest they should stumble and fall as the Jews had done. Now, I want to offer it as an example this morning. God's goodness. I want to go back to one of the first times that the children of Israel stumbled and fell. And as I said, we're going to see in this example a twist. How God can take something which seems terrible and turn it into a great blessing. What appears to be harsh treatment by God actually renders itself a great blessing. And today, second part of our lesson, we're going to look at applying this idea to ourselves. How we can benefit from this example of God's direction and God's guidance. So I want to go back. God promised the children of Israel in Exodus, the 6th chapter, verses 6 and 7. He promised to deliver them from the hand of Egypt. He says, wherefore, say unto the children of Israel, I am the Lord. And I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will rid you out of their bondage. And I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. And I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God, which bringeth you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. If you're toiling away in the hot sun, you made bricks all of your life, and you will continue making bricks the rest of your life, and that's your only existence. What a great hope, what a great promise this represents to you. Freedom. Have your life to live. To enjoy a world you don't even know about. Great promise that God made to deliver the children of Israel from Egypt. Before we continue with our study, we'd like to approach God's throne in a word of prayer. We'd like to take just a moment to recount the history and also introduce a couple of facts that maybe you haven't thought of or didn't know. When the Israelites left Egypt in the Exodus, there were, according to Exodus 12:37, about 600,000 men on foot beside women and children. Now that sounds like, well, let's see, that's twice the size of San Antonio maybe. Okay, that's manageable. But the men on foot number of 600,000 would have been only the able-bodied military-age men. The children of Israel had been living in Egypt for 430 years, Exodus 12:40. And scholars believe that the total number of people, the total number of Israelites who left Egypt during the Exodus, women, children, and old men included, was around 2.4 million people. Now, the Bible also tells us, Exodus 12:38, if we include the Egyptians who chose to join the Israelites, the number would be even greater. Many other people went with them, and also large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. So we have a multitude of people approaching 3.5 million. I cannot even herd my natural family, 4 children and grandchildren, can't do it. When they're all together, they cannot be herded. I cannot imagine trying to get 3.5 million people going in the same direction. And this was without modern communications. We didn't get the cell phone notice, didn't get the text message. We're moving out at 6 a.m., be ready. This happened with good old-fashioned leadership, without anything other than reliance and faith in God. And another thing to consider that I'd only recently become aware of, you know, the Egyptians, they really, really wanted the Israelites to stay. They were their slave force. They really, especially the Pharaoh, really, really, really wanted the Israelites to stay. Well, through this variety of miracles that God used with his outstretched arm, as the Bible says, they became so detested. The Egyptians were so glad to get rid of them that they gave them of their treasures. They walked out of there with a lot of loot. Was freely given to them. I'm just so glad to get rid of you. Please go away and don't come back. That was the miracle of God. God's hand working. They witnessed a series of miracles culminating in the parting of the Red Sea. They left Egypt with a high hand, leaving behind a life of slavery, endless hard labor, and abuse from cruel taskmasters. And they even plundered the spoils of their captors. After living through these incredible events, they rejoiced and they sang praises to God in Exodus 15, verses 1 through 21. But this excitement and gratitude did not last, because we read just very, very shortly, 3 days. After following this celebration, Exodus 15, verses 23 through 24, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" 3 days after the Red Sea parted, they started complaining. They started murmuring. Time and again, God met Israel's needs. Remember, this was a nation of millions of people. He provided water, manna, quail, and many other things for them. But did the lesson sink in? Well, the account continues just over a month after the first Passover, when we were getting ready to leave Egypt. Just a month, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt, the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness, and the children of Israel said unto them, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots," in other words, the stew pots full of food, "and when we did eat bread to the full, for you brought us into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Now, I'm reading this story, reading this account, I'm emphasizing this because, do you get the feeling there's something wrong? Something's not right, right? Something is missing from the spirit of the people. They remind me of my 3-year-old grandchildren. Every time something doesn't go their way, they have a meltdown. The children of Israel had a meltdown. They couldn't handle the least adversity. They could not deal with the least struggle. Their heart was still back in Egypt. And as they approached the land of Canaan, Jeff was reading this morning, didn't get to read the whole story, but Moses sent out 12 spies to determine the lay of the land. And remember, this was just a very, very short time after they had left Egypt. I don't want to read that account out of Numbers, the 13th chapter, beginning with verse 25. They returned from searching the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron, to all the congregation of the children of Israel, under the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh. And they brought back word unto them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, "We came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it flows with milk and honey. This is the fruit of it." Wow, this is really one amazing place. "Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak." So we have three reasons already thrown up. It's not, how are we going to overcome this? What strategy are we going to use? We can't do it. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea, by the coast of Jordan. There's no easy path for us to go. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men that went up with him said, "We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, "The land through which we have gone to search is a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And we saw there the giants, the sons of Anak, which come from the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, so were we in their sight." Now, I went to college at New Mexico State University. New Mexico State University was not a college football powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination. But I remember going, and I'm not a short person, I remember going to the cafeteria to eat. I was going to say eat food. That would be a stretch. To eat every day. And I remember the football players coming in. And you just go, "These guys are big." We were not powerhouse. But can you imagine 9 foot tall people walking in? Yeah, you would seem like a grasshopper in their sight. You see, God wanted a people who would trust in His leading. But the Bible account reveals that the Hebrew people, whom God had been supernaturally delivering and sustaining, they balked at entering the land that He promised them. Because the generation of people that God delivered from Egypt proved unwilling to follow God's lead on their way to the promised land, they died before entering it. Only Joshua and Caleb and the second generation of freed Israelites were allowed to enter. And I picked up this from Numbers 11, verses 4 through 6. You want to argue that the people's heart was not back in Egypt? Listen. "And the children of Israel wept again and said, 'Who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish, which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes.'" Is the heart of the people not back in Egypt? It wasn't with God. It wasn't with this campaign. And when you... I'm sorry, this is not my favorite list of foods to eat. I do eat them and I do enjoy cooking with them. They have some properties. But to mention cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic, and I know Brother Curtis, he would not have commented on the fish at all. To say that this is the feast of kings, this is the height of luxury that we could enjoy. I'm sure the Lord just wanted to cry. The wilderness-born children that came afterwards knew nothing of slavery. They did not have this victim mentality. They did not idealize enslavement. You see that past verse? They were idealizing enslavement. Look how good we had it. We had fish in the pot. We had cucumbers. We had some melons to eat. All was good, right? Instead, the wilderness-born children were trained for battle by their sporadic confrontations with the many nations that attacked them along their 40-year journey to the land of Canaan. Jeff was reading about Sihon and Og, two kings that came against the Israelites during this period of time and were defeated. The new generation of Hebrews was raised up to only know the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and Moses. They became an army of seasoned warriors, ready to take the promised land and to settle it. And I want to go back now and read Paul's account in Hebrews, the 3rd chapter, verses 12 through 19. He says, and this is explaining Romans 11, 22. "Take care, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart, leading you to fall away from the living God. But exhort one another every day, as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we share in Christ, if only we hold our first confidence firm to the end. While it is said today, when you hear His voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. And who were they that heard and yet were rebellious? Was it not all those who left Egypt under the leadership of Moses? And with whom was he provoked 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they should never enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? So we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. The heart of the slave cannot conquer new territory. The heart of the slave cannot conquer new territory. God realized that the people who left Egypt were not capable of surviving the rigors and the hardships that conquest would bring. They had the heart of a slave. Their heart was still back in Egypt. They wanted to go back to that old way of life. Likewise, only when we trust in the providence of God are we able to overcome and to claim the victory. So, how can we apply this lesson from ancient Israel to our lives today? I use this as an example. Many of us try to plan out our lives, and as we're young, we kind of preset a schedule of events, such as, well, I'm going to finish college by age 22, and I'm going to get married by age 23, and I'm going to purchase a house before I have children. Life doesn't often follow our carefully planned itinerary, however, and that's a simple example, but for this and other reasons, we may feel that we are wandering in a wilderness of our own, moving in a different direction than we had planned. But I assure you that God knows us better than we know ourselves or are willing to admit. And there could be many reasons that God might choose to take us through a long journey in the wilderness, just as he did the children of Israel. You see, it is often true that attaining our goals without proper spiritual growth can drive us further from God. If we do not experience the sacrifice, we cannot and will not appreciate the reward. I've seen this so many times in just my own family. When you give someone too much, they don't appreciate it. They take you for granted. If we do not experience the sacrifice, if we don't have to do without, if we don't have to fight, if we don't have to struggle, then we will never, ever truly appreciate the reward. Someone that is successful might have achieved their goals quickly and think that it is due to their hard work, their wisdom, their skill, their education, or their talent. They don't give God any credit. They don't even think about God in the equation. Now, they might be on a successful track in life, but they do not know that they're spiritually lost. You see, they didn't have to do without and develop spiritually in order to succeed. Others are in the wilderness, as Paul says, because they've disobeyed God's commandments. And now they're in a place where either they seek after God or they're going to live, they're going to dwell in a very, very bad place. James 4 and verse 8, draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. I like perhaps a little more modern translation, draw nearer to God, and he will draw nearer to you. Well, this wilderness experience of the children of Israel is a good analogy of spiritual rebirth in our own lives. It only takes, did you realize it? I did not. Did you realize it only takes about 2 weeks to march a great multitude of people from Egypt to Canaan? 2 weeks. And they took 40 years. Okay? Clearly, this wandering in the wilderness was meant to be a major transition in the life of the children of Israel, not just a simple change of residence. 40 years was the length of time it took for all of those Israelites who were born in Egypt, except Joshua and Caleb, to die off. Only those born in the wilderness made it into the land God allotted for them. Their only source of survival was the continuous, miraculous providence of God. And that's why I say, I always thought, well, that's mean. Promise these people you're going to be going to the land of milk and honey. We're going to walk out of slavery after 430 years. Nope. You messed up. You're going to die in the wilderness. I just didn't understand. So I offer that as an example. Perhaps you're here and there's some part of the Bible text that bothers you. I encourage you. Learn more about it. Because when you understand God's truth, you see, number one, The people were disobedient. Number two, they had the heart of a slave. They couldn't fight a battle. What were they going to do when somebody comes out with a spear and a sword and points it at them? They're going to run and hide. Right? Number three, they didn't trust in God. He couldn't use them. But he did fulfill his promise. It was just to their children. Again, another lesson for us. That promise, the blessings might not come to us, but it can come to our posterity if we continue in the faith, if we continue as faithful Christians. We might not receive it, but a generation after us might or will. I'm also going to say that it is really good if we experience a spiritual death to that slave distrust mentality that is this world. It's essential. It's good that we go through the fight. It's essential. It's essential that we die to this world and be resurrected to trust in God. If you want to better trust in God's providence, a good place to start is recognizing that you need God. He doesn't need us. We need Him. Poor example. I took Spanish for 6 years. I started in the 7th grade. I enjoyed it tremendously. I was able to win a scholarship my senior year of high school as I graduated to go spend 6 weeks in Guadalajara, Mexico. In those 6 weeks, with my base of understanding, I learned more Spanish, became much more fluent in those 6 weeks than in the previous 6 years combined. I had to use it. The signs are in Spanish. Everybody talks Spanish. You don't get away from it. In fact, my children, Joanna and Jonathan, I'd gone down to Saltillo to visit Brother Juanito. And we came back after 3 days. And I remember the joyous celebration as we drove across the bridge in Laredo. And Jonathan says, I can read the signs again. They're in English. I can read the signs. And Joanna says, and I'll be able to watch TV again. I'll be able to understand it. You learn by being immersed. If you really have, if you get to a place in your life where you have to depend on God, you're going to learn quickly that you need God. And that's not a bad thing. And so the Bible encourages us to rejoice in our trials. It's tough. I'm not praying for any trials, trust me. I learned long ago, don't pray for patience. Don't fear the trials that come our way. There are opportunities for us to grow and to learn to depend upon God more. Sometimes we realize you just got to turn it over to the Lord and let Him work it out in His good time. And this is the essence of our rebirth. If we try to trust ourselves or someone else, we cannot increase our faith in God. The complaining and the insurrection, the attempts to do away with our conscience, and I put Moses was the conscience of the children of Israel, are all part of us going through the wilderness process. Let me read that again because that one hit home. The complaining. Yeah, I do that. The complaining, the insurrection. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do it my way. The attempts to do away with our conscience. Moses is talking to us. Are all part of going through the wilderness process. I think that anyone who is wandering in the wilderness, so to speak, can really relate to the experience of the children of Israel. Remember, those born in the wilderness only knew a life that was wholly dependent upon divine providence for their very existence. You realize? They did not know where their next meal was coming from. It's not the same. I run an engineering business. I contract myself out to different folks. I don't know where my next job's coming from. I don't know if I'm going to be busy or not. I got Karen. Karen's praying for me. It's that same, but to a much, much greater degree. If you didn't know where your next meal is coming from, you just trust in God that it's going to be there. And this represents part of us that comes to learn from experience that we can trust in God. We are not going to walk closer to God because of our pride, because of our own achievements. It's not going to happen. It is only when we endure a great and terrible wilderness experience, it is only in the fire trials of our faith that our faith can be purified. James 1, verses 3 through 5. Let's look at this in a new light. Knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing, or mature. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that gives to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. trials of your faith. 1 Peter 1, verses 7 through 9, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perishes, that the trial of your faith, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen ye love, in whom though now ye see him not, yet believing, you rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls. The Israel that went into the wilderness was reborn as the Israel that went into the promised land of rest and trust, with more trust in God than any generation of Israel before or after. Have we thought about that? Because they had been through the wilderness, they had a greater faith in God than any before or after them. The first generation of Israelites in the promised land were the most victorious of all. Likewise, if we endure the trials of our faith, we also will be more victorious in our Christian walk. So to close this morning, God's goodness. Behold the goodness of God. He trained a generation to trust in Him. That was the sacrifice. And thus defeat the inhabitants of Canaan. That was the reward. He can train us. If we're willing to endure the sacrifice and learn to trust in Him more, we too will have a promised land of rest awaiting to us. And this example serves as a great inspiration to all of us down through the ages to trust in God, that the trial of our faith might redound unto praise, honor, and glory for Jesus Christ. So what seemed to be harsh, leading them out of the land of Egypt, only to say, you've got to wander around in the desert for 40 years. Actually was just God working it out so that they would be able to do what they had been promised. How many times must we go through the wilderness that we can have the faith of this generation of Israelites, that we might be victorious? Behold the goodness of God. I offer this as an example, an inspiration to us. Trust in the Lord with all of our heart. We never like to close without offering a song of invitation. If you're here, if we can assist you in any way, won't you come together and stand and sing.